Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop from Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress Studios in Washington, D.C. And I've been up late at night watching the Republican National Convention. Why do I do it? Well, maybe I'm part masochist, and maybe because I don't want you to have to undergo the same suffering that I have undergone. It's been, well, dare we say, interesting. Speaker after speaker told us that we are in danger. We need to be very, very afraid. The enemy is coming to get us. Some of them are blacks at home. Some of them are Muslims. Some of them are just evil, evil Obamas. And Hillary Clinton is a murderer. She's a killer. And the people shouted, "Lock her up." And I thought I would awake from that dream, because never would I think that in America you would see the kind of thing you would see in George Orwell's 1984, or that would remind me of fascist rallies. Lock her up? Really? Hillary Clinton's a murderer? Really? I mean, I knew there were wackos who had ridiculous ideas. There's always a fringe of people who are mentally ill who believe such things. But that mentally ill loony bin wing has taken over the Republican Party. And the irony is, it's not really about Donald Trump, except to the extent that he typifies what's going on. He didn't cause this. He is the result of this. So all the weird stuff going on that's just coming out now, and I'm not even talking about the obvious plagiarism by his wife, Melania Trump. We'll get to that later on in the hour, where his campaign manager lies about it, and then, it's obvious that it's plagiarism, and then basically we find out that Melania herself plagiarized Michelle Obama's speech because she liked Michelle Obama, which I guess is why her speech is the only one that seemed to me to be relatively normal. Except she didn't say much about Donald Trump. And then comes the bombshell out. Just today, did you hear this? Trump people approached Kasich people, you know, the governor of Ohio, the only Republican on the stage that didn't sound completely crazy in the nomination process, the one who gave Medicaid expansion to his people and so forth. Trump apparently approached Kasich about being vice president, but that wasn't the job that Trump offered. He offered the position of shadow president. And the person that approached Kasich was not some low-level staffer. It was none other than Donald Trump Jr., perhaps the only person in the last 2 days to give a decent speech. Donald Trump's son, the one most closely connected to his business, approached John Kasich and said, "How would you, John Kasich, like to be, in effect, shadow president of the United States?" When Kasich asked what he would do as vice president, Trump Jr. said, "We give you domestic and foreign policy." Domestic and foreign policy. So Kasich asked, "What would Donald Trump do?" And his son said, apparently without irony, "Make America great again." Now, I have long said that Donald Trump wants to be king of America. He wants to wear the crown and sit on the throne. And if they don't have that, well, he'll take being president. He loves Hail to the Chief, and he wants to go out with smoke just like Beyonce. But he has no idea how to actually be president. He has no policies, and he was looking for a shadow president. And for all the times I mocked George W. Bush as being controlled by Dick Cheney, and to many extents, particularly in foreign policy, it was true. Domestic and foreign policy? And there are people who are actually going to vote for this guy? And the only thing that anyone appealed to in the House in Cleveland was racism? It's just hard to believe this is happening. I'm going to have, when we come back from break, a Republican strategist, one I respect. I'm going to ask him, because he's in Cleveland, what the heck is going on with his party? If you want to call in, you can too. 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I've got a guest on the phone, someone who's been on my show many times before. His name is Mike Lane. He's the president of Intellifant Strategies. He is a Republican strategist and, dare I say, more of an establishment Republican. And yet he is there in Cleveland on the floor, or at least around the floor of the Republican National Convention. Mike, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, how you doing? Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it very much. Let me just update you on my location. The floor of the Quicken Loans Center was a little noisy for this interview, so I stepped outside, and I'm now sitting in the bleachers overlooking what I hope you will find ironically appropriate, beautiful progressive field, the home of the Cleveland Indians.
I do, and I'm glad to see that this is probably the closest to anything progressive you'll ever get, but I appreciate that, Mike. Let me ask you this. I want to ask you about the mood of the convention. It began with the Never Trump faction, which I don't know if you consider yourself a former member of or not. I know you were a Marco Rubio supporter, but they tried to get a roll call vote. They didn't get it. And then something that seemed to me really gratuitous yesterday, when Alaska and D.C. gave their roll call votes for who they wanted to nominate, their votes were changed from Rubio or Kasich or whomever they picked to Donald Trump, which he didn't need their votes to become a nominee. Is Trump showing just no respect at all for those that didn't support his nomination?
You know, no, Mark, I don't think so. I think it's actually being run quite fair. I think the party may have learned something from the heavy-handed nature in which 4 years ago Mitt Romney treated the Ron Paul people, where, you know, if they even tried to cast their legitimate votes for Ron Paul, their microphones were pulled and all their votes were cast. The only votes that were recorded were the ones cast for Mitt Romney. At this one, as people who watched saw last night during the roll call of states, those votes cast for candidates other than Donald Trump were duly recorded, and the only ones that were changed were ones that were cast in violation of the rules of the convention.
And well, so what did Alaska and D.C. do wrong? I realize this is obscure rules here, but I didn't understand why, when I heard D.C. say their 19 votes and none of them were for Donald Trump, yet they were all recorded for Donald Trump. What happened?
You know, I'm not sure about the obscurity of those rules either, but it was explained very clearly several times from the podium that rule such and such, and I forget the exact citation, was such that you needed to, you need to have your votes cast in conformance with the rules of the convention. And I think at least in Alaska's case, it was explained that since there were no active candidates at the time of the Alaska convention other than Donald Trump, it was illegal to have any votes cast for any other candidate.
Oh, that may be D.C.'s too, because D.C. may have been late as well. I'm not sure. But let me ask you in general, you're not there, I know. You're not a delegate, but you're certainly a strong Republican. You were a supporter, I believe, of Marco Rubio, right? You endorsed him?
I was. I was first on the Scott Walker team, then I switched to Rubio. After I killed two candidacies, I figured I'd sit the rest of it out.
Fine. So as a former Walker Rubio, who are, let's face it, fairly establishment Republicans, as a supporter of them, and there are certainly established Republicans in that room, albeit in the minority, how is that camp of Republicans feeling right now?
Well, you know, I don't know that I'm representative of all of them, but I'm at peace with where the party is. You know, I don't agree with Donald Trump about everything. I probably have about 70% agreement with Donald Trump on many issues. I have very, very sincere differences with Donald Trump on some of the issues that I consider important, mostly, I think, which would be national defense issues. But beyond that, if I can agree with him on 70% of issues and I can only agree with Hillary on 10% of issues, I'm very comfortable where I am.
Let me ask you about the tone of the convention. Apart from Donald Trump's family, who I do think took a markedly different tone, but apart from his wife and his two kids, it seemed to me that virtually every speaker out there was talking about fear, was saying the enemy was out to get us. Giuliani seemed to make it seem like, you know, we're all about to die any moment. There was that theme and the theme of Hillary Clinton is a murderer, lock her up, she's a criminal. It just seemed to me all about hate and fear. That's how I took it. Is that how you took it?
You know, Mark, conventions take on a life of their own. I would call it more red meat for the masses than hate and fear. You know, you want to get the masses all worked up. You want to get the convention floor excited and buzzing. If they start chanting lock her up, so much the better as far as the convention's concerned. I would expect to see an equivalent yet opposite kind of chant coming from the floor of the Democratic convention in Philadelphia.
But here's the difference. I expected them to attack Hillary, and I'm sure that the Democrats are going to attack Donald Trump. No question about it. But what I didn't hear, apart from his family, was a lot of positive words for Donald Trump. And it seemed to me that the argument against Hillary Clinton, I heard, I don't know, a dozen speakers, maybe two dozen. I can't recall a single one that talked about policy. Yeah, there are lots of mentions of Benghazi and lots of mentions of emails and, you know, several, you know, Chris Christie's long indictment of I don't know what kind of crimes where everyone's shouting guilty. But I didn't hear anyone say we disagree with Hillary Clinton on jobs or taxes or schools or immigration or I don't know, any issues. It just seemed to me just a personal attack.
There is a heavy dose of red meat being thrown at the conventioners. As I said, I think that's natural and normal for a convention. I think you did see some positive comments the first night from Senator Sessions of Alabama. I think that probably tonight you'll see some very, very positive things. But it's the last night when you wind up positive. You know, look for Mike Pence's speech tonight to be very, very positive in terms of issues and policies and ideas. Although, certainly, in his role as vice president, he will turn into the attack dog as soon as the convention is over. You know, listen for some more tomorrow night that's going to be positive. You know, you start off a heavy, heavy attack on the first night and a half, two nights, and then you slowly morph into something a little bit more positive. It doesn't strike me as an atypical convention, although I will candidly admit the single most unifying issue that we have among Republicans in this election is not Donald Trump, but our unifying factor is Hillary Clinton.
So the big story of the first night of the convention, and frankly it's extended to night two and three, is Melania's taking from Michelle Obama's 2008 speech, which fascinatingly, everyone was obvious that she did it. Then Paul Manafort, the campaign manager, denied it, just blanketly denied it. And now basically Melania and the speechwriter have admitted, yeah, they took from Michelle Obama. It was a mistake. But that right after the campaign manager basically lied to Chris Cuomo and to lots of other people saying this is ridiculous. Of course it's not. That's what the media is talking about. They're not really talking about even the red meat at the convention. What are conventioneers talking about? How's this plagiarism story? Are they mad at the press for bringing it up? What do people think there?
No, I don't think they're mad at the press for bringing it up. Look, we know the press is against Republicans, and we just have to deal with that year after year after year, cycle after cycle.
Well, wait, is it against Republicans to point out plagiarism? You don't deny it's plagiarism, do you?
No, it was clearly, look, the speechwriter today as
she copped to it. She admitted it.
News admitted it.
Right.
She offered her resignation. Her resignation was rejected. Melania is comfortable with her work as a speechwriter. I think the disappointment, from my viewpoint and a lot of people in my particular position's viewpoint, was two things. Number one, it was just an incredibly stupid rookie mistake.
It was an unforced error.
Why would you do something like that? And number two, once it became apparent what the mistake was, you know, get it off the table. Oh, yeah, well, guess what? It was fabulous words when Michelle Obama used them. They're still fabulous words today. Oops, yeah, we mixed something in, move on. And
but what does it mean that they didn't do that? I mean, when they reported it on Monday night, every commentator said, I'm sure what they'll do is admit it was done, fire the speechwriter, you know, and move on. People even talked about, you know, I'm sure Donald Trump will immediately say, you're fired. That's what his surrogates were saying. And then the campaign manager comes out in a weird 1984 denial and says, no, there's no plagiarism here, nothing of the sort. Is this what we're going to expect from a Donald Trump presidency, just sort of blanket denial of obvious things?
Mark, I told you before the thing I was going to say this, if you brought this up, and that is that, you know, President Obama initiated and really rolled out the whole concept of always deny, never admit, move forward, and ignore your mistakes. So what Barack Obama pioneered, Donald Trump seems to be perfecting.
Okay, so that's a deflection, but you're saying you don't have a problem with what Paul Manafort did. I hope you do have a problem.
No. My advice, had they asked me and they didn't, would have been to go out Tuesday morning and get it off the table. Say, you know, they were fabulous words when Michelle used them. They remain fabulous words today. They're a sentiment that every parent ought to teach their children every single year.
Real quick, I don't know if you've heard this story. We got about a minute and a half left, but there's a story that's coming out that Donald Trump not only offered the vice presidency to John Kasich, but offered to make Kasich in charge of, quote, domestic and foreign policy, unquote, while he'd be in charge of making America great again. The offer was supposedly made by none other than Donald Trump Jr., which is not a very low-level staffer. Have you heard this story? Are people buzzing about this story?
No, I have not heard it. Nobody's buzzing about it. That may be because the convention doesn't convene until 7 o'clock tonight, and people just haven't gotten around. So you're surprising me with this.
Well, let people know the story because it's growing. It's a fascinating story because I have long felt that Donald Trump really didn't want to be president. He wanted to promote his businesses, and that he's like the dog that chases the car and caught it and doesn't know what to do with it next. And he was willing to make, apparently, John Kasich his shadow president, but John Kasich said no, and there's no little bad blood between them about it now. So maybe
there'd be no reason for Kasich to turn an offer like that down, but similarly, there's no way somebody who's just been nominated for president of the United States would have to make an offer like that.
It's a very weird thing, but it's an unnerving thing. So
goes back to the same thing, you know, Reagan and Ford in the 70
right.
In the 80 convention doing the co-presidency thing.
But you even know, Reagan and Ford suggested co-presidency. This sounds like Donald Trump wanted to be king. He wanted to be the titular leader while John Kasich did all the work, and John Kasich said no way. It's just a fascinating piece of political theater. I'm shocked. Every time I think I'm going to be shocked, but then more things like this happen.
I'll keep my mind open and prepared to be surprised if this is confirmed, but it just does not ring true to me, Mark. I just can't put a lot of credence in it at this point until I hear more about it.
Okay, fair enough. Michael Lane, thank you very much for coming here on the air and sharing your perspective. I want to encourage people to call in and chat about Mike or the convention or anything you've heard, plagiarism, whatever's on your mind. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Fear, hate, is that all the Republican Party has left? Is that the only thing that unifies them? I don't know. Let me know what you think. We'll be right back after this.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin, talking about the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. You know, as a talk radio host, I'm used to my share of Looney Tunes calling in. Let's face it, there are people out there who are mentally ill, people who are unhinged, even more frequently than actually, most of those people don't call in. A few do. More often, they're going to attack me on Facebook, on my website, marklevintalk.com, on my Facebook page, facebook.com/marklevintalk. And I'm used to it. I've heard these things before, and I'm not even saying they're exclusive of the right. I remember for years trying to fight back against Looney Tunes on the left, claiming that September 11th was the planes were ordered by Bush, and you know, the World Trade Center was blown up because Dick Cheney was planting explosives and all. And I'm no fan of George Bush or Dick Cheney, but I knew that they didn't take the World Trade Center down. You know, you could argue that their inattention to detail allowed them to miss quite obvious concerns about Al-Qaeda. That's a legitimate argument. But to say that, you know, they blew the World Trade Center up or somehow conspired to cause 9/11 is ridiculous. Well, the conspiracies on the right are as ridiculous. And let's go through them. I mean, the biggest conspiracy on the right above all was this ludicrous notion that Barack Obama was not born in the United States. Think about how idiotic that is and how much you have to be mentally ill or just incredibly ignorant to believe such nonsense. I mean, you'd either have to believe that Hawaii wasn't a state, which is easy to look up, but that wasn't the argument. No, the argument was that he was somehow born in Kenya. Now, I realize it's unnerving if you're extremely racist to handle the fact that our current president of the United States has an African father, or had an African father, since his father is no longer alive. I realize that's unnerving. But they didn't say Barack Obama has an African father. They claimed he was born in Kenya. It's just weird. It's not just conspiracy-minded, it's weird. It's like, it like makes less sense than the KKK. The KKK says, we hate black people. Okay. And they went around burning crosses and harming black people. There's a certain, I don't know, honesty to that. But the claim that Barack Obama was born in Kenya is just weird. Because you have to be extremely ignorant and extremely racist, or you have to be a really, really good con man who believes that tens of millions of Americans are extremely ignorant or extremely racist, and that that will help you in some way. And who was the biggest and most famous supporter of the birther theory? Well, Donald J. Trump, of course. So there's that theory. There's the theory that Barack Obama is a Muslim, right after they attacked him, remember, for being a radical Christian with a radical Christian preacher. There's the theory that he's somehow a socialist or a dictator. And now there's the theory that Hillary Clinton is a murderer. They had a woman. Look, I understand the horrific grief of a woman who loses her son. But when seven congressional committees, including extremely partisan committees set up for the sole purpose of finding dirt on Hillary Clinton, I mean, active, hateful people who truly want to destroy Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party, could not find an iota of evidence, a smidgen, a piece of dust that suggests that Hillary Clinton was in any way responsible for the deaths in Benghazi, and they completely exonerate her. To bring on a woman so mentally ill with grief that she actually blames Hillary Clinton for the murder of her children is worse than irresponsible. It's cruel. It's cruel to the woman, and it's the criminalization of American politics. I do not recall a single convention in all of American history where the chant was "lock her up." Maybe if Richard Nixon had run again in 19... He couldn't even run again, but you get the point. Maybe if Watergate had been known before... Even in Watergate! That just goes to my example. November 1972, we did know about Watergate. And Richard Nixon did run for re-election. And I don't recall a single Democrat chanting, "lock him up." Certainly no one in the McGovern campaign. This is fringe stuff. I mean, the Republican Party, I disagree with the conservative principles, you know, of William F. Buckley or George Will, but these are intelligent people who I respect, even though I think they're wrong, and they're people who argue about policy. But Barack Obama was born in Kenya. Hillary Clinton is a murderer. Lock her up. Guilty? That was Chris Christie's theme. Guilty, guilty, guilty. I actually was thinking back, because I'm into history. I was thinking back into American history, trying to find a time when political opponents actually wanted to lock up their opponents. And I can think of one time in American history. It was in 1798 when John Adams tried to lock up people who disagreed with him with the Sedition Acts. But even then, he didn't argue for locking up Thomas Jefferson. This is unheard of in American politics. It was common with fascism, right? Adolf Hitler, when he ran for election, and he did run for election, would definitely want to criminalize his opponents, Mussolini, Vladimir Putin. I can give you examples from history. Remember, Paul Manafort, Trump's campaign manager, actively defended dictators from Ferdinand Marcos, the dictator of the Philippines, to the dictator of Ukraine, which was supported by Vladimir Putin. So I guess to the extent that Donald Trump has a Putinesque style, we can say that, well, his campaign manager may have a role in that, or maybe it's just Donald Trump is naturally authoritarian. But I don't think anyone, I won't say anyone. I don't think the majority of America is going to buy this. And I think it's really corrosive of who we are as a people. In my lifetime, Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill would go out for drinks, attack each other politically on the basis of ideas, on taxes and such, and then go out for a drink and try to find a compromise. Oh my God, was that a generation ago? The Republican Party, by shutting down the government, by calling Bill and Hillary Clinton criminals, by trying to impeach the President of the United States, Bill Clinton, for an extramarital liaison that, let's face it, Kennedy and Eisenhower and Bush Sr. are said to have had, and Roosevelt, and several other presidents. This is the criminalization of American politics. And it's not both sides doing it. It's entirely the Republican Party. They understand that thoughtful people choose democratic progressive positions on jobs, on immigration, on equality under the law, LGBT rights, women's rights, income inequality. American people support democratic positions. All they have left is fear and hate. Did you hear anything about tax policy or the deficit? Did you hear any of those things? How was Donald Trump going to create jobs? The economy is always number one issue for the American people. Did you hear any discussion of how he was going to make America great again? Or did you hear lots of discussions about the enemy? The bad people. The terrorists. The black people who apparently they think are all out to kill cops instead of just one or two lunatics. Blaming protesters who have an absolute First Amendment right in nonviolent protest to go out and talk about how many young African-American men are shot dead by cops every day. Not only their constitutional right, I would argue it's their constitutional duty to go out and protest, and blaming these protesters for lunatic domestic terrorists. This is all the Republican Party has? Fear and hate? There's a really powerful article, I've linked to it on my website at marklevinetalk.com, called The End of a Republican Party. It's on 538.com. Let me just give you two quick quotes from that article. One is by a conservative blogger, someone who, you know, talks on Red State and certainly is a strong conservative. He writes, quote, "Where do you go when the only people who seem to agree with you on taxes hate black people?" Okay, he's just a blogger. Listen to Tim Miller, Jeb Bush's communications director, former communications director, because Jeb Bush is no longer running. Tim Miller said the Republican Party is, quote, "essentially a party that's driven by white grievances and by white, not racial politics, but a set of white identity politics." When Donald Trump says make America great again, what era would he say America was great? Maybe during Jim Crow laws? The 1950s, perhaps? When America was whiter and had fewer immigrants? This is what the Republican Party is about today. Even Mike Lane had to admit the only thing that unites the Republican Party today is hatred of Hillary and liberals and Democrats. They've done a study of the words spoken at the Republican National Convention. I'll let you guess what word was most said at the convention. Think about it for 5 seconds. What word do you think was spoken more than any other in all of the speeches? The word, of course, was Hillary. The second most common word was Clinton. The third most common word, America. The fourth most common word, Donald Trump. This is all about a hate Hillary, hate Democrats, hate blacks, hate Muslims, hate immigrants, hate women kind of convention. That's all they got is hate and fear. And that's why so many Republicans, I think, are leaving their party. And then, even if you get past the hate and fear, all that you're left with is incompetence. You're left with lies and incompetence. Look, just listen to Paul Manafort, the head of the Trump campaign, the campaign director. Listen to how he responds to the obvious nature of Melania Trump's plagiarism of Michelle Obama.
A big part of the case I'm hearing here at the convention for why Donald Trump needs to be president is that Hillary Clinton can't be trusted, that she doesn't level with the American people, which is another way of saying she lies. That is what this is going on right now with this issue that should be small about this speech. You don't like that you got caught with some of Michelle Obama's language in the speech. Who knows how it happened? You had a big group working with Melania on it. You don't want to acknowledge it because that's the way this campaign works. That plays into the second problem, which is that when faced with something that you did wrong, you just deny it, no matter whether it's true or not, whether it's the man who has a developmental disability who works for the New York Times and Donald Trump mocks him and then says, no, I didn't. Whether it's a star that represents the Star of David and you say, no, it's a sheriff's star. There is a pattern, whether it's Baron John Miller that was really Donald Trump. There's a pattern of denying the obvious. What happens when you're running the government of the United States and you don't want to deal with what happens then? That's the concern. That's why I don't understand. Well, you won't just own this little thing and move on.
Well, Chris, I guess it's all in the eye of the beholder, because the pattern that I see is a pattern of the media not being prepared to look at what's really going on in America, look at what's really happening in the Trump campaign, look at what really is being tapped into, and looking at why it's working.
The idea that we're ignoring something that doesn't matter flies in the face of what we're about. This is about the truth. It's about the truth, and that's all it's about. The language came from Michelle Obama's speech.
The truth is the words, the truth is the feelings that were expressed by Melania Trump that night, which you don't want to focus on. It was the message that she was communicating. That's the truth. And that message reflected her.
Of course I want to focus on it. We say she gave a good speech. We say it was compelling.
Well, then move on.
The words were the same that Michelle Obama. But I can't move on because you keep lying about it, so I can't move on from it. Because I have to talk
about
what is true.
Did
the language, did a portion of the language of that speech come from Michelle Obama's speech, yes or no?
As far as we're concerned, there are similar words that were used. We've said that, but the feelings of those words and the commonality of those words do not create a situation which we feel we have to agree with.
A pattern of denying the obvious. I can't say it better myself. A pattern of denying the obvious. Barack Obama was born in the United States. No, he wasn't. What? A pattern of denying the obvious. Hillary Clinton didn't do anything wrong in Benghazi. A pattern of denying the obvious. Hillary Clinton didn't kill your son, ma'am. Donald Trump did become his own PR, public relations person. A pattern of denying the obvious. Donald Trump won't release his taxes. Oh, he wants to. He's just hadn't gotten around to it because he's being audited or some such. A pattern of denying the obvious. Are Republicans really that gullible? Are they that stupid? Is that the answer? Republicans are just idiots. They can't recognize plagiarism. They can't look at a birth certificate. They just hate people that aren't like them so much. They're willing to just abandon logic and just deny the obvious. When a presidential candidate compares Hillary Clinton to the devil, to Lucifer, to Satan, that could be an SNL skit, a Saturday Night Live skit. But instead, that's who the Republican Party is about. They're going to deny the obvious. 2 + 2 does not equal 4. War is peace. Ignorance is strength. Freedom is slavery. And Donald Trump is going to make America great again. And Hillary Clinton, she's the devil incarnate and a murderer and needs to be locked up. Who, apart from a mental patient, believes this nonsense? Are Republicans really that idiotic? Help me out here. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Be right back after this.
He's a Fulbright scholar and he speaks French, but he couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl. It's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Just a couple minutes left. I'm going to go real quick to your phone calls. Wayne in Albuquerque, line one, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. I want to say that I thought you had a very good assessment of Donald Trump. Your prosecution of him was solid, and I agree with pretty much everything you said. Having said that, I do want to point out that I think we can all agree that this election is going to be close. President Obama himself said that we need to run scared. I think that most people agree that the election is going to be decided over maybe 1% or 2%. And the main point I want to make now is this. I think that a lot of what's being spoken now on the radio is that people are still fed up with what's going on, and there's a lot of symptoms to back up the fed-up stuff that's going on. I don't think that Hillary's going to attract a lot of new people to the party or to draw...
Well, we'll see. I got to move on to my other caller, but I got to say this. I hope it's not close, because I think that Donald Trump is an absolute catastrophe, and I also think I want to win the Senate and the House, too. But I appreciate your call. One last thing. The polls show that Trump supporters, 52% are very angry, and 39% are somewhat angry. So when I see a lot of anger, that must be why. Very quickly, Gabby in Phoenix, line three, only got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that the reason that they want to hang Hillary or lock her up is that's the only way they're going to win the election, is to eliminate the competition.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's all they've got. And apparently, that's the only thing that unifies the Republican Party. Thanks for calling in, Gabby. Do we have time for Michael from the Bronx? Michael, 10 seconds. Oh, he's gone. All right, we don't have time. I apologize for that. We will be back. And by the way, I'm going to be on Fox News. Talk about someone who I disagree with often. I'm going to be on Fox News during the Democratic National Convention late at night. That's 10 to 1 a.m. Pacific time. So you can watch me there and see my commentary then. I will be back this Monday, of course, for more of the Inside Scoop. Tune in then and check out my website, marklevinetalk.com.